This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, they join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you as we're still dealing with a fallout of the spate of positive tests from the Marlins over the weekend and what that means for Major League Baseball and, quite frankly, every other sport that isn't in a bubble scenario going forward.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, we're looking at baseball, well, some say massive spread on the team. Others say, well, we have protocols that can deal with it, so that's a discussion we're obviously going to have today.
But there's one guy saying that.
How does NFL and college football feel right now? Are they watching? Are they learning? Is anybody learning from anything? You know, because it sounded like in the past that some weren't looking at the others, you know, that they weren't seeing the protocols or weren't, you know, wondering how a situation was going to play out. Well, now it's right here in front of us in baseball. So how does this thing play out and who is watching as it plays out?
Dad, you'll appreciate this because we got this news yesterday during the body of the show.
Right.
And it was jarring. It reminded me a lot of, remember when you'd get rolled up on, someone roll into the side of your legs or your knee, and all of a sudden you get this flash of pain and your whole leg is throbbing.
Yep.
And you fear the worst. In that moment, you reach down and you're like, I for sure tore my knee, my calf's ripped off the bone, something happened in this spot, and it's this general pain from the knee down that worries the hell out of you. And then you get over to the sideline, and then you take a series off, and then things start to calm down and it localizes and you can figure out where the problem is here. That's what yesterday felt like. It felt like the sky was really falling on this one, and now we still might have a serious problem. Like, we might have torn our ACL in this process, but now we have to be able to assess it. And we know this morning the test results for the Marlins, the test results for the Phillies also that were a part of this, and the tracing program Major League Baseball's got are going to be coming back, and that is going to tell us an awful lot about how we proceed forward.
And I guess going forward, we have to kind of try, and to your point of finding it localized in the knee, where's the issue here? What is the issue? What caused this? What precipitated this? Will this continue to happen for any reason that we're not seeing, or that baseball, at least at this point, until we see the football start, isn't doing correctly in their protocols?
Yeah, and again, what baseball's doing right now, the Marlins have postponed their next two games. They're supposed to play, I believe, Wednesday? Or Thursday?
They're supposed to play Wednesday in Baltimore.
Yeah.
They had 11 players and two coaches test positive over the last few days. Now, originally, we had heard canceled on the game yesterday.
Right.
Now they're saying postponed.
They've changed the wording
both of those games.
And then the Yankees games, of course, in Philadelphia, that was also not played because that's where the Marlins were and in that visiting clubhouse, and they're trying to figure all that out. So what is going on with Major League Baseball? Well, Commissioner Rob Manfred had an extended, long interview on MLB Network with Tom Ferducci, and he addressed a lot of topics. Here, first and foremost, on the protocols that are in place to protect the players from getting COVID-19.
We talked about the situation. I think most of the owners realize that we built protocols anticipating that we would have positive tests at some point during the season, that the protocols were built in order to allow us to continue to play through those positives. And I think there was support for the notion that we believe that the protocols are adequate to keep our players safe.
Yet we have 11 players who have tested positive on one team, and playing through is the issue, right? Because a lot of people think the Marlins, after four positive tests before the game, should never have even taken the field against the Phillies.
Well, that was Friday. There was testing on Friday, one positive on Saturday. Testing on Saturday, three more positives on Sunday. Then what happened under the protocols, they did contact tracing for all four positives. It was a small number of players that met CDC guidelines. They were quarantined. They did additional testing. We did symptom checks, temperature checks, and we did decide to proceed with the game on Sunday. And
that's the issue.
That certainly seems to be the issue, is where do you draw the line? Because we've asked this all along. How many positives spring this kind of action of canceling a game, of postponing a game, as they're going to say? So they did postpone the game, but the game after that, but should they have ever played that game in the first place?
Correct.
And we won't know. Listen, as far as we have to wait for tests to come back on the Phillies and see what happened there, because they were on the field with them. But was it one game too long they went by letting them play that game and not saying, wait a minute, we got, but what they said, this is where other sports can learn. They followed their guidelines, their protocols, right? We had positive tests. We did contact tracing. We felt under the CDC guidelines that there was enough social distancing and or non-contact that we could quarantine them and still go ahead and play the game. And we know all the players wanted to play the game, and that's the last person in the world, the last thing in the world you should do.
Correct.
Is listen to the players, because for the most part, players unaffected in this want to play the game. So that, I think, was a mistake in listening to them, and you needed to think long and hard about, is this a place where we step in? Hindsight's always 20/20, but that's going forward, you're going to have a couple of football programs in NFL and college that may be coming up to that those same decisions.
And the rest of a Major League Baseball season where right. they have to look at this and just saying our protocols are good enough when you talked about in this situation, and I look at this and I have some degree of empathy because you're saying we're following the CDC guidelines for this stuff. We're doing right by what we believe that the people in charge of this have told us. And in this case, it netted you more cases than you originally thought you had in that spot. And so it should be an admission that, all right, it's not foolproof. It's not a process that is necessarily going to work perfectly. And so we need to be willing to adjust. And part of that adjustment has to be, this cannot be left in the hands of the players. Like, period, end of sentence.
As we've said before, that's why someone takes your helmet away from you in an NFL game when they think you, but you're in the concussion protocol. It's not your call anymore.
And concussions aren't contagious. Correct. Like, that's an even bigger reason why you would do this.
And
here.
It's one thing to say we have protocol for positive tests, that's fine. Do you have protocols for dealing with a massive outbreak? That's the more important part of
right.
this.
Right, and I'm sure they do. Then it's going to be a matter of, are they working? Are they the correct protocols? I think under the guidelines, they have protocols for this, though and we keep going back to this, but I do think I understand it. There is no number. We always ask for the number. What triggers this?
Yeah.
You know, what triggers, well, we had four, then all of a sudden we had, you know, 13. Yeah. You know, we had nine more out of this. So what triggers us to get to this point, and was it done a little too late? That's what other entities need to learn from this, is when to step in and say, before we get to what happened to the Marlins, we need to step in and be more proactive.
Yeah, and Manfred said also in that interview with Tom Verducci, this isn't a nightmare scenario. He said it wasn't a positive, obvious, but he didn't consider this the nightmare scenario. Now, David Price, the Dodger pitcher, who opted out of playing this year, put a tweet out last night, was very interesting, where he said, now we really get to see if Major League Baseball is going to put players' health first. Remember when Manfred said players' health was paramount, ? Part of the reason I'm home right now is because players' health wasn't being put first. I can see that hasn't changed, and Commissioner Manfred responded to David Price's tweet.
I disagree with David's comments. I think both for the MLBPA and for us, the health issue was the one that had to be resolved. It was the most important one to all of us. In terms of the activities that have happened in the last few days, as I said, you know, we followed the protocols to a T. We went beyond those protocols in the sense that we canceled games, two for the Marlins so far. We're open to having to cancel additional games if we feel it's necessary to keep our players safe.
So before, we believe our protocols are adequate to keep our players safe. Now we're already going beyond them in this instance in a way that's understandable. All this is to say is you don't have to come out here in staunch defense of your protocols. You can understand, right. like most people have said, and I believe Dr. Sills, the NFL's doctor, even said this, this is a living, breathing thing. It's going to change and be updated as we go along.
Yeah, I don't think it's going above the protocols to cancel a game. I think that's part of the protocols.
It should be, and adjusting them is fine.
One of the protocols is what triggers enough to cancel a game. Yeah. That should be in your protocols, not above and beyond your protocols.
That's the thing that I took away from that. How is that not part of the protocols? If you have this outbreak, then you have to do this. I don't understand how that wasn't part of the process to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's fair. I think what it comes down to is he said we follow the protocols and the guidelines. Is this the CDC? What is this? Because something didn't work right, correct? Yeah. So whatever the protocols were, you have four positive tests and you decided to play the game. But you said you followed your protocols and guidelines. Were there ones, obviously, baseball is talking to doctors. Who are they talking to? The CDC? So they all felt, or was it one of those situations where you wanted to play the game, you wanted to do it, so you found a reason to do it? Well, there's four positive tests, but we don't think they had contact with anybody. We did the contact tracing. We think there was enough social distancing. And the players want to play, so let's go ahead and play.
Confirmation bias. Look, this is what I believe, and these things help support the thing that I believe. Yeah. So we'll have much more reaction throughout the day on this, including the NBA. bubble. WNBA, bubble. MLS, bubble. Those are all working. Why did MLB opt for a different approach? And could the bubble have worked? We will get into that after this.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
Delighted to be joined by our friend, our baseball insider, Buster Olney, host of the Baseball Tonight podcast. Buster, thanks for being with us this morning. Before we get into the specifics of the Marlins case, what did you make of the case Commissioner Rob Manfred made for himself and the baseball safety protocols for COVID-19 in his extended interview with Tom Verducci on MLB Network last night?
And Trey, if you don't mind, can I get the mushy stuff out of the way with Golic?
Yeah, go for
it. Let's just, from a listener standpoint, Mike, I just want to say thanks for your humor and your humility and your honesty, your humanity, especially your humanity. And as someone who's worked with you, thanks for tolerating my emails, and thanks for tolerating my baseball sensibilities, which, let's face it, you viewed with a lot of disdain at times, and rightly so, with all of my sports unwritten rules. And thanks for letting me be part of the universe that you put together.
Well, Buster, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you. Those emails made me sound smarter than I really am, number one. And number two, I always appreciated guys like you that would come on, guests like you that would come on and just understood the show and had fun with us. Didn't just come on and, you know, talk about your sport. You were able to go anywhere with us. And that's what I think really made my year so much fun was with people like you just kind of got the show and had that great personality. So I appreciate that out of you very much. Thank you.
Well, absolutely loved it. Trey, to answer your question, look, I think Rob, in his interview with Tom Verducci, went, you know, broad strokes and spoke to generalities. When you speak to people at the team level, they talk about more concerns. And, you know, having the protocol referred to as Swiss cheese is what I hear. And the fact that there doesn't seem to be a lack of there doesn't seem to be uniformity. There seems to be a lack of, complete understanding about what needs to take place. That's clearly what happened with the Marlins in terms of the timing, in terms of the conversation within the team. And it does feel like that, you know, in some respects, some of these groups are calling audibles. Now, whether or not that's supposed to be the case or that's just, a natural situation when you put it in, some of this stuff in the hands of people on the ground, it reminds me actually, you know, for years, of course, the handling of concussions in football was you ask the player, well, how do you feel? Well, what's the player going to say? And in this case with the Marlins, it seemed like some of the conversation was, well, what do we want to do? It shouldn't be that way. It should absolutely be done from 30,000 feet when there's specific information about this guy tests positive. Okay, do the contact tracing. Who he's in contact with, take that guy off the field. Take that guy off the field. You don't have enough players to not field the team. No problem. That's what we're doing to keep everybody safe and to prevent a spread.
So along those lines, Buster, could we just say this is the pandemic we always said was going to control the narrative? Were the protocols followed incorrectly, or were there just man-made decisions that were bad decisions?
I think all of the above, to some degree. Now, there are differing accounts as to what happened within the Marlins world in terms of from the time that this outbreak began to happen on Friday and to the end. And that certainly needs to be cleaned up moving forward so other teams don't follow the same thing. But I've said all along that, you know, baseball is like a rowboat in a hurricane. There's so much that's out of their control. I think by and large, when you talk with players and you talk with executives, they feel like the players are working their butts off to make this work. But all it takes is one. You know, the belief is that this outbreak came from a time in Atlanta, and who knows how that happened. But the fact is that things like that, you know, are probably that happened in this case, and it may happen again. I think Rob is right in mentioning that, you know, that there was some anticipation of the fact that this was going to happen. And now the big question is what's baseball's response going to be? One thing I really hope they don't care about, you know, the quote unquote integrity of the season, you know, integrity of 60-game season. Guys, this is like the backyard wiffle ball game when you played it, you played as a kid with your friend, where you were like, okay, if you hit the ball onto the roof, then it's a home run. If you hit the window level, it's a double. They're making this up as they go along. And so if it turns out, you know, that the Marlins play 54 games instead of 60, who cares? There's no point in trying to ram through a bunch of makeup games. That's what I was hearing from folks at the team level. Just do what you need to do to control what's going on with the Marlins, and when they're ready to go, then you restart.
Yeah, Buster, I think that's been the interesting part, is competitive balance and things like that, of the terms that they're chasing here as far as a threshold. And we've heard that at the team level when we asked the question we've been asking of every commissioner in every league, is what's the threshold that triggers a shutdown in all this? And Rob Manfred continues to cite, when we put a team at a competitive disadvantage, what is the team response to that notion of that being the line?
That they fully expect that what that means is that with 60, you know, these 60 pool players, that they're just going to keep trying to plow ahead. You know, heads down, full steam ahead, damn the torpedoes. And they're going to try to make it work. And I remind everybody, and I think it's only 7 of the 30 owners are still in place from 1995. In 1995, 29 of the 30 baseball owners were prepared to play with replacement players. You know, basically Class A and Double A players, and they were going to call that a major league product. And you know, the folks at the team level, general managers, team presidents, have told me, look, they want to get through this season. They want to, you know, push this product through. It means a lot. I really believe the only thing that might change that direction would be the Russian roulette scenario. That somebody gets really sick, especially someone of prominence, or God forbid, worse. You know, for years, for example, there was talk in baseball 2007, 2008, 2009 about the catcher collision rules, and then Buster Posey, a star, right, got hurt, changed everything. You know, that slide into second base, Chase Utley a few years ago, the fact that it happened in October changed everything. And I think that's the big X factor here. You know, would there be something that changed everything? On the team level, you guys saw in the face of Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager yesterday, sincere concern, genuine fear about what's possible. But I think unless you have a situation where someone really gets sick, they're just going to try to go through.
You know, and along those lines, I want to go back to what you said. If the Marlins played just 54 games, who cares? And listen, I 1,000% agree with you, but what everybody is going to say is it's the Marlins. Exchange it for Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, one of the top teams out there. Would we all feel the same way, do we think?
Golic, were you eavesdropping on my call yesterday with the general manager of one of the teams? That's exactly what he said. Let's be honest here. If this was, you know, one of the prominent teams, it would get a lot more attention. The Marlins are probably, and I don't mean this in terms of the players on the team as people, but they're the least regarded organization in baseball. If this is a situation, an outbreak was going to happen with any team as far as baseball is concerned, then, you know, the Marlins are probably the candidate that it would prefer.
Buster with us this morning. So Buster, there's so much to get into this. When do you think we'll know, and what do you think will be the ramifications of the test that come back for the Phillies, who were on the same field with the Marlins at that time?
Yeah, and that was the big focus, as you guys know, yesterday for baseball, to get the Phillies tested and to get them in order. If there are some positives, I still believe, you know, that Rob's words last night that, you know, that they don't think this is a nightmare scenario will hold. I think their hope is that there would be no tests or few tests, enough so that they would have enough players in their bubble to go ahead and to play. And I do underscore again the determination to play.
Buster, to that end, from what we've seen so far, and I guess a lot of this will be based off those results, but what do you think is the next step as far as changes Major League Baseball can tangibly make to their process going forward? I know the commissioner talked about it being enough, but we've seen already, he said in his own words, we had to go beyond it. So in your mind, what are the one or two things they've already got to ratchet up even before we get through these tests?
I hear at the team level that they feel like the idea of testing every other day leaves too many big holes. They feel like that needs to go from every other day to every day. And there does need to be an overriding administration of what happens when these positive tests happens, where somebody who's not in a team group is telling them, this is what's going to happen. You know, give us the information. This is exactly what's going to happen, and not leave it for confusion within the team group. And I will tell you that what I'm hearing at the team level is that guys like Dan Halen, Morgan Sword, who are two of Rob Manfred's lieutenants, are working their butts off. And there's a lot of respect for the efforts that they're making. But I think there needs to be more aggressive leadership in that way. And to that end, I think we got to hear from Rob more. Like, it's really surprised me that we haven't heard more from Rob, you know, from Rob and Tony Clark. I mean, let's face it, we've heard more from Tony Clark about, you know, Alex Rodriguez's view on revenue sharing more than what happened with the Marlins yesterday. And I think that needs to change because the players, the staffers, all around baseball, they're concerned. They're scared. You guys should see the text messages I'm exchanging with players. And I think people need to be out there explaining, okay, this is what happened. This is what we're going to do to correct the situation. And so rather than have an idiot like me come on and try to answer the question of what baseball is going to do next, Junior, we need to have the people who are in charge of the sport say, this is what's going to happen.
So with that in mind, Buster, when this whole process began, you were 5% they start, 0% chance they finish. Where are you on your odds? Has that changed in any way, shape, or form when it comes to the finishing part?
I feel like I would put it now at something in the range of 40% that they finish.
Wow.
I think that now they got through the summer camp and they are and they're playing. I think that they have an absolute desire to just put their heads down, you know, cover their ears, cover their eyes, and just go as far as they can go.
Well, Buster, we always appreciate your time. And again, I appreciate your time over the last 22 years and you helping me get through this show each and every day, my friend.
Thanks, Buster.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Buster.
Thanks,
Buster.
Guys.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
Ladies and gentlemen, none other than Adam Schefter. Adam, good morning. Thanks for being with us. What can you tell us about what the NFL is doing or is learning from watching the outbreak that happened with the Marlins over the weekend?
Well, let me just say this. First of all, what an honor to be on this week in Mike's farewell week. And I went through this the last time I was on not knowing that I had this appearance, but I just want to congratulate Mike on an unbelievable run. And I can only imagine how emotional it's going to be. Before I answer your question, I want to ask Mike how emotional this week is going to be for you, Mike.
You know what? Right now, it's not been. I mean, I'm sure maybe by Friday, you know, when the last day is here and there is the thought that it truly is going to be over, there might be some emotion. I guess it's less emotional, Shefty, and more memories. You know, you start to think about all the things in the past, way back when I started this with Tony Bruno, of different things that we did starting in just one market in Chicago, you know, and this thing building to whatever it is now, 300, 400, some affiliates. I think right now it's more that, more memories. And a lot of those memories, my friend, are with you. There's no doubt about that. As I told Buster, I always appreciate those that come on and get the show. And you've always played along with our antics over the years. And we're more than just this NFL insider. You know, you were a true friend of the show. And I do appreciate that because it certainly helps with the show and being where the show has gone over the years.
Well, it was an honor, and I congratulate you and salute you, and hope the week turns out to be an emotional ride that is something that you always remember. Now, to answer Trey's question, I just think that football has set up its own rules, and everybody's aware of what's going on in baseball. And I don't think it's necessarily the same thing. I think baseball was always going to have certain challenges. Every sport is going to have certain challenges. Our world has challenges that it would have to overcome. And football is a little bit different. But what's interesting to me is that, again, if you go back to the plan that the two sides passed on Friday night, you know, one of the things that the NFL put in there is that players can't go out at night. They can't gather in bars. They can't go to large religious services. They can't do many of the things that people are discouraged from doing in today's world, or they'll face discipline. And so I think that it's a situation where the league has looked out and come up with these rules, and you hope for the best. And the other thing is that in talking to a bunch of coaches, front office members all summer long, they were pessimistic. And now, from some of those same people, I actually hear some cautious optimism, which I'm a little surprised about because we've got it spiking all over in the country. And it's a situation where at a time where there are so many cases in so many places and so much hospitalization, so much sadness, football is just rolling on. And you talked about camps opening today, Trey. Yeah, they opened today. I mean, players report. But this isn't camp opening. I mean, the way we know it. You know, usually they roll in and everyone's getting ready and they're on the field the next day and we're talking about positional bat. And there's just none of that this summer because it's not relevant. Because it's 8 days of double testing on COVID and quarantining and making sure you don't have it. And then 3 weeks of conditioning work and then 2 weeks of practice. And if we go through all that, then we get football when it's supposed to open. But the league is moving forward as if, you know, this is not going to be an issue.
You know, Adam, there are guidelines and protocols each sport has set up, some are certainly overlapping and some being a little bit different. I would imagine, and I guess talk me out of it, after seeing, and you'd have to be foolish not to look at what's happening in baseball, another outdoor sport where they're traveling. Why would the NFL not, one of the first possible changes to make is said, you know what, we're just forgetting the 2 weeks of everyday testing. We're just going to everyday test throughout the season.
Say that one more time, Mike. Repeat that.
Why wouldn't the NFL just change their policy and say, we're going to test every single day throughout the season? We don't care about the 5% or not after seeing what happened in baseball.
Well, maybe they will. Look, this is such a fluid thing. And there was a battle over it, and players wanted tests every day. And where they came in was they tested for 2 weeks every day. And then if the transmission rates are below a certain percentage, then they go to every other day. So the only thing I could say is that there's going to be a ton of testing, period, whether it's daily in the beginning or every other day. And so we go from there. Yesterday I had Thomas Morstead on my podcast. He's a member of the NFLPA Executive Committee. And yep. And he talked about the concern of taking away tests from the public. But he's like, look, we've hired a private company here to do this. And they're spending a lot of money on testing. And so the NFL has forged ahead with doing this its own way. And that's the situation, basically, that they're going to do a ton of testing. I don't know that it's going to be every day. It will be in the beginning. But that's how you start out with the players. It's two tests. It's one test. Like, they report today, test it, go home, stay at home, come back in a few days, test it again. And assuming that both tests are negative, then okay, then you can start conditioning work. And if they aren't negative, then you get put on the COVID-19 list.
And I think we're already seeing that at work in a number of places. The Minnesota Vikings have been the ones dealing with it the most. They had a trainer test positive, 4 players placed on the reserved COVID list there. What's the tone or tenor around that organization right now as they appear to be the first one really dealing with it in a meaningful way like this?
You have to say it one more time. I'm just texting a couple of things. There's a couple of things going on, Mike. I apologize. Oh,
No problem. Yeah. I understand there's news always getting ready to break, Adam. I understand that. Just the tone and tenor around the Vikings organization right now.
Oh, yeah.
Some guys going on the COVID reserve list there. Certainly their trainer testing positive was big news. What the mood is around that building?
Well, that's interesting, right? Because I think from a big picture, that's got to be highly alarming that your head trainer, the man that's in charge of infectious disease in your building, has got COVID. Now, the way it was explained to me is his kids have been very busy this summer, living their lives as you hope kids can do. And they believe that he got it from one of his kids. And there were 4 Vikings rookies that were placed on the reserve COVID list yesterday. And they told me that they had no contact, zero, with Eric Sugarman. Like, they weren't even in the building with him. And so, again, everyone's trying to figure it all out. I think from a big picture, yeah, you have to be concerned. The trainer's got it. If he can't avoid it, who, how can everybody else avoid it?
Yeah.
But from a small picture, they don't believe it's related. And so it's a case where, you know, they're going to continue to do the best they can. Look, this is just new for everybody. Everybody's trying to figure it out. And so they're going to be without their head trainer early on while all this testing goes on. And my understanding is he's doing pretty well right now. And that just goes to show you how simple the transmission can be. And if the head trainer can get it, then anybody can get it, because you think that guy is smarter and more careful than anybody.
Yeah, well, there's no question about that. Well, listen, we're starting the grand experiment right now. The runway, we've always said the runway for the NFL has been the longest. Well, guess what? We're approaching takeoff.
Absolutely.
And we're about to see how much turbulence there will be as we begin the flight. Adam, we appreciate time this morning. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one. Be well, Mike.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
Including our next guest, who was a high-level college football athlete, put his college and potentially NFL career on hold to go be a Rhodes Scholar. Sounds like a good thing to do. Was still played a few years for the Tennessee Titans and is now doing a great job as a neurosurgeon. And he's been very involved in the COVID-19 outbreak from the beginning, because he works in Boston, where it was one of the hardest cities hit when the COVID-19 pandemic first broke out. We've had a couple of chances to talk to him in and around the NFL draft, and we're delighted to talk to him again. Dr. Myron Roll is with us, former NFL DB and a neurosurgeon. Dr. Roll, thanks so much for being with us again. We appreciate your time this morning. We're sort of seeing this play out in real time, these sports trying to get back and going during a pandemic. The NFL's about to start. The Major League Baseball has returned, and we've seen an outbreak. Where are you on how these sports are handling the idea of playing athletic events in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, thanks for having me again, guys. It's always a pleasure. And I think that the leagues, especially the NFL, trying to be very creative and innovative and finding ways to get these sports back on the books. You know, we all love sports. We have loved them. I played in the NFL, and I have cousins Samari and Antro role played. And frankly, the NFL helped pay for my medical school, right? So, you know, I mean, I owe a lot to it, and there's no question about it. But at the same time, when you have a pandemic and infection rates still rising, hospitalizations still occurring, PPE resources still being in high demand, and you know, the country really on edge with a lot of uncertainty from the normal citizenry, just uncertain how things will go, community with really uncertainty in the sense of how do different people respond to A, treatments, B, just being, you know, persistently hospitalized, and C, you know, when they've recovered, you know, are we fully through with the virus in that sense? So without a lot of statistical data, without more sort of research to understand the trajectory and the trend of this disease, you know, I think it's very dangerous and in ways irresponsible to continue some of these leagues and trying to sort of experiment with these athletes and these staff managers and equipment managers and other people involved to say, well, we have a few cases here, but we're going to, you know, rely on these quick detecting early symptom technology and advanced testing to sort of figure this out. But yeah, I just think it's a very ambitious and somewhat dangerous proposition.
I don't think you are alone in that thought, but they are going to try and do this. So now that we know they're trying to do this and they're reporting to camps, in your mind, what are the absolute musts, the few musts that they have to do if they want to have any chance of getting a season off at all?
I think the absolute must are being very transparent with their data, being transparent with, you know, how many infections they have. You know, if you have three negative tests and then one positive test on a player, you know, I wouldn't consider that a win just because there was three negatives. So that one positive is the issue, right? And then also, you know, making sure that you absolutely get the opinion and the advice and, you know, seek the knowledge and insight of independent parties, epidemiologists, and anesthesiologists, intensivists, people who have worked on the front line of COVID patients in the hospital or research settings. So that they're able to give, you know, valuable contributions to what's happening, right? If you want a league to start, your agenda may be so narrow focused on just getting the games going, regardless of what happens, you know, with testing and how players may be ill or whatever the case may be positive. But if you have another group that you give true essential and real authority to say, you know what, we're going to halt this. This is too much. You know, four cases is considered a pandemic in epidemiology terms, or eight cases is considered a an outbreak or whatever the case may be. You know, listen to these folks and give them a real voice, and listen to the players as well. I think that needs to be an absolute thing that happens, because if you want to treat these players not like commodities, you need to give them a voice in all aspects of the sport, not just with Black Lives Matter or breast cancer awareness or domestic violence or these other initiatives that you push into the community. Give them a voice here as well. If they're unsafe, then listen to that and take that into heavy consideration.
Dr. Myron Roll with us here on Golic and Wingo. And Doctor, I guess to that extent, there was also the negative side of listening too much to the players in Major League Baseball. We've seen in a couple of instances the Marlins, who had a rash of positive tests on part of their last trip. Part of the reason they played despite a number of known positive tests was because the players decided amongst themselves that that was something that they still wanted to do. Major League Baseball ends up canceling or postponing their next couple of games, in addition to another game that was supposed to be played in that same stadium. Based on that response that you've seen and the commotion around Major League Baseball, is it paramount that there is someone else inside these leagues making the decisions about who gets on the field and when it comes to this?
Well, absolutely. I think that, you know, the people who, again, I'm a neurosurgery guy, do brains, I do spines, tumors, you know, things of that nature. And I just was sort of redeployed as being a COVID-19 physician with Influx in Boston. But, you know, there are amazing women and men who have, A, collected data, B, worked directly with COVID patients, and C, can give, you know, real profound insight and really have no tie or no, you know, ambition to see, you know, many homers hit or, you know, bases stolen or ERAs down to, you know, some remarkable number. They just really want to see the safety of the country and of these men and women who are part of these leagues be at a premium. So, you know, I believe that if you have a virus right now that we've seen been able to be curbed, at least in New York, New Jersey, Boston, where I am, by, you know, certain measures, you know, being implemented, then I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for it to happen again. But it's going to take a collective effort. And if there's leagues that are saying, you know what, we're just going to work and isolate in a silo and separate and apart as a different entity than the rest of the fabric of America and rest of what's happening, especially playing in these hotbed states or taking players from these hotbed states or traveling in these hotbed states and having fans who are from these hotbed states. I mean, it's very difficult. It places the players in a very, very hard position when trying to think about, okay, do I need to, you know, look up the number two receiver when I'm on cover two deep pass, or should I think about, man, am I going to bring this infection to my family when I go home because I'm just not sure if I'm safe playing right now? These are decisions that shouldn't be made by these athletes who are going out there and trying to play a very, very difficult sport.
Yeah, we've talked about that, especially with the concussion protocols in the NFL. They take the helmet away from the player, so it's not up to them. And, of course, as we brought up earlier, you can't transmit a concussion. You can transmit this virus and this disease, as Dr. Myron Roll is with us. So we heard from MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred in an interview yesterday when he said the outbreak, which was up to 11 players of the Marlins, he didn't believe that was a nightmare scenario for shutting down that team or shutting down the sport. In your learned opinion, is there a number that you think, when it comes to players on a certain team or a number of teams, that would say, okay, guys, this isn't working and we need to pull the plug here?
So I don't have a specific number. I would say if you have a cluster of cases, then it needs to be seriously looked at. If you have a group of players who have been in one area, one location, one locker room, then that needs to be investigated. And everybody in that area needs to be tested as well. Everyone has been in contact with them. And allow the process to take its time, rather than saying, you know, we're just going to postpone, you know, one game, two games. You know, treat this as if this is a person who was tested positive in a bank, in a community bank somewhere in Nebraska. Or, you know, tested positive in one office building in downtown Boston, Massachusetts. If that were the case, you wouldn't shut down production for just 2 days and say, okay, let's get back to it. No, you would take the slow measures, the slow precautions to make sure that everything is okay. Because the worst thing here is that if you get one of these players testing positive, and God forbid, they decompensate very quickly and have to be treated with acute care in some hospitalized setting, And you say to yourself, well, was it really worth it to really rush back and not take the necessary slow precautions, go low and slow to figure out if this thing is okay and this thing is safe? I think all of us would say, no, that's a terrible scenario. We would certainly like to avoid that, to do everything you can to avoid it.
Absolutely. And again, you mentioned it. There are certain precautions you can take, and it has been proven, whether it's in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Boston, where you are, Massachusetts, simple steps that we can all use to help slow the spread of this disease if we want these sports to be played when we want them to be played. Myron, we said this at the draft. We said it after the draft. We'll say it again. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for what you've done at Mass General, which is out of your area of expertise of medicine. And thank you for taking the time and sharing some of your insights with us this morning. We absolutely appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure to be with you guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Myron. No worries.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Delighted to be joined now by Adrian Wojnarowski, our fine NBA insider and the host of the Woj Pod. Woj, good morning. Thanks for being with us. So give us a sense of where the NBA feels right now as they've sort of the process here. They're playing the games to get ready for the resumption of the regular season. And dare we say it, knock on wood, so far everything has gone pretty much according to plan.
Yeah, maybe even better than they hoped. Not just from a testing perspective, guys, and you know the fact that they've not had a positive test to come out of the bubble yet. They don't know that they'll throw a shutout here in Orlando. And I think they've... despite getting off to a good start, it remains, you know, a very vigilant environment. But I think even more so from a mental standpoint and, so much uncertainty coming into this about how players were going to react to the environment, organizations were going to react, and that the players have really been bought in, invested. No significant injuries yet, and I think people worried about coming back from such a long layoff and shortened training camps. Would you see a rash of injuries? That hasn't happened yet. So I think so far, you know, with the restart of the seeding games within, 48 hours now, they couldn't have asked for more out of how this has begun, but there's still a long way to go until mid-October when they would crown a champion.
But their runway is, we keep using that analogy, has been very, very smooth as they've been going down it. Woj, to kind of put a ribbon on this, we were discussing the difference of Lou Williams and his 10-day quarantine as opposed to Zion Williamson and his 4-day quarantine. Both were out of the bubble. Both got tested every day. Both were negative in their test. Yet Lou, with the picture because he was out to dinner, gets a 10-day quarantine. Did it to you, because I know to some it felt like it was a punishment as much as it was, well, we're going to quarantine you because you were out in a public area.
It was both. It was, it is a form of punishment to get the 10-day quarantine based on the fact, you know, that he was at a gentleman's club, even if he was just there to eat. I think the NBA believed that the optics were not good, and it was just not, I think the message, not just externally they want to send about how seriously they're taking this, but internally with others. And, there are going to be players who come and go out of this bubble between now and the end of the season. You know, Gordon Hayward plans to leave sometime in September for the birth of a child, and, you know, that's going to be right in the middle of the playoffs. And, you know, they're going, they're going to essentially, with the quarantines, you know, base it upon how long you were out for, the testing, who you were exposed to outside the bubble. But I think for Lou Williams, no question, there was a level of punishment there. And I do think the one thing you found, and they knew this going in, there were a lot, just as many players, who bristled at the idea of how limiting this environment were. You know, there's even more who want it protected and who want to know that they're going to be safe, that the virus doesn't get in here and threaten the safety and the viability of continuing this season.
Talking to Adrian Wojnarowski with us, our ESPN NBA insider. And Woj, the other comparison there was to Zion Williamson, who also returns to the bubble, has that four-day quarantine. But where are the Pelicans at with the way they're going to roll him back into actual game action, since we know they've been so cautious with him really every step of the way in his rookie season?
Yeah, for anybody to be out as long as he was, to be out over a week and not being able to participate in workouts, you're going to ramp the guy back up carefully. And I think there's still a question of whether he plays or not in the Pelicans opener on Thursday. It is possible, but I still think they're working through that idea. I don't expect he sits very long in this restart. If he doesn't play Thursday, I think you'd expect to see him, shortly thereafter. It is a very short runway for the Pelicans if they're going to make a run and get in a play-in game and be able to play Memphis. They've got a Portland team, Sacramento, the Spurs, who are all competing for an opportunity to steal that eighth seed in a play-in. And so, I think Zion was in very good condition throughout the hiatus. He had come back in great shape. I think people saw that. And I think the hope is that they'll get him back on the court here sooner than later.
And then, of course, there's a team that's not in the bubble, Woj, that is making news, and that's the Knicks. They're finalizing that deal to make Tom Thibodeau their next head coach. We had some people on yesterday talking about this, the idea of finally trying to get someone, a star, to want to come and play for the New York Knicks. The idea of World Wide West and Tom Thibodeau there, how attractive does that make, in your opinion, and on what you're hearing about team players that might want to actually be a part of the Knicks organization now?
Yeah, I think, Leon Rose, the new president, William Wesley, and now Tom Thibodeau, there's a lot of history there. There's a strong relationship, and that's been absent in some other partnerships in New York. I use the word partnership loosely. There have been, it's been a revolving door among coaches in New York. I mean, they have been through, over a dozen since Jeff Van Gundy left. And so I think for the Knicks, what they need Tom Thibodeau to do here in the short term, before you talk about going to get a star in free agency, you have to have an infrastructure of talent and building up role players and starters. Superstars don't walk into empty cupboards. They don't walk into places where there aren't the pieces in place where you plug me in and we can go right at it and start winning. Brooklyn was able to do that. The Los Angeles Clippers were able to do that by getting LeBron James in free agency and then Anthony Davis. They became more attractive for him to want to be traded there. And the Knicks have a long way to go to replenish and develop their talent base. They have draft picks from the Kristaps Porzingis trade, additional picks that they have. But I think for Tom Thibodeau, before we can talk about big free agents, I think you're going to need to see him start to build an infrastructure. And that's just something the Knicks haven't been able to do. And Tom Thibodeau is a program builder. And I think in terms of creating an environment where players can get better and he can maximize the players he has. The president coach role in Minnesota did not work largely because, Jimmy Butler wanted out. And once Jimmy Butler wanted that trade, I think the things fell apart for them there. But I think in New York, where he's sharing I think the player personnel responsibilities with management, might be a better structure for Tom Thibodeau. But they've got a long way to go, I think, before we talk about star free agents wanting to sign with the Knicks. I think there's just a lot of infrastructure work that's going to have to be done first.
Yeah, and they're still waiting for the first one of those to actually come through. Yeah. Woj, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Woj.
Guys, thanks.
Golic makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
Jeff Van Gundy is going to join us, our ESPN NBA analyst, but also a former coach in the NBA. Jeff, did you guys have after an off season and coming back, did you guys have conditioning tests that you would put the players through to check how in shape they were?
We had a running test, you know, body fat and weight requirements. And I ran into a player that didn't meet those very often in his time with me. I ran into him randomly a few years ago, and I tapped him on the shoulder, and he turned around, and he gave me his weight and his body fat at that precise moment. And it made me laugh that it was so ingrained. But someone told me, a former player told me, Larry Johnson got hurt one year doing the conditioning test. And so you guys were just talking about that. I didn't remember that, but man, that would scare me if I was a coach knowing that these guys had been off all summer.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true.
As Jeff Van Gundy is with us. So, Jeff, we're through this process of getting closer and closer to the start of the NBA regular season inside the bubble in Florida, which, of course, is still a hotbed for COVID-19 cases. But God willing and knock on wood, everything seems to be going as close to plan or according to plan or maybe even better than planned so far. What do you think of how the NBA has sort of managed this crisis so far?
Well, the NBA has done a tremendous job, and now we just hope it continues. Not that the job that they're going to do, but I think the setup, the restrictive nature that they put in place will make it eventually very unfun, but ultimately it gives the players, teams, the best chance to finish the season. You see it with baseball that if you're not in a restrictive type of environment, it's going to be very hard to manage. And so the NBA, they've made it very restrictive for the players and the teams. And right now, it's paying off.
Yeah, the one thing, though, it may be unfun, as you say, but at least they'll be into their routine then of game days and have probably some less free time than they would, as Jeff Van Gundy is joining us. As far as, let's talk about play, real play is going to start on Thursday. If you're put your coach's cap back on with the top teams out there, how are you dealing with the star players in these eight games leading up to the playoffs?
Well, I think the top seven teams in the West and the top six teams in the East, because there's no home court advantage to be gained, are going to treat these eight seeding games as if they're preseason. So you want to ramp up slowly with the minutes. So by mid-August, when the playoffs start, you're ready. Now, the other nine teams are going to play in a much different mindset. They've got to be ready starting Thursday to win these seeding games. And so I think it's going to be interesting when you watch games where teams are like in a must-win situation or in a let's just ramp it up slowly situation, how those dynamics impact the competition. You saw it last night. We practiced broadcasting the New Orleans-Milwaukee Bucks game. And New Orleans has got to win right now. And they're down Zion Williamson for the moment. They were much more intent on winning that scrimmage than Milwaukee was. And it'll be interesting to see how that carries over into these seeding games.
Jeff Van Gundy with us, brought to you by the new Ford Super Duty, built Ford Tough. Jeff, with that in mind, how would you handle Zion in this? He's been away. That's been such a weird outlier situation and having to deal with a coach and all of the protocol around this. How are you handling what you want to be the long-term future of your franchise in a very strange short term?
Well, he's been off. I think now it'll be about 12 days, and they play the first game or the first day. And I think it's you have to try to figure out, and it's not easy if you're Alvin Gentry, how many minutes he can handle, not just conditioning wise, but how many minutes he can handle and help your team. Plus, think about it, because he's missed so many practice dates, you know, what's their chemistry like on the floor? They played very well last night. And I think these are hard decisions and unprecedented decisions that coaches like Alvin Gentry are going to have to make. I would say you'd probably see him around 20 to 24 minutes when he gets back, and hopefully for them he can ramp up quickly because they have a real shot of making the playoffs.
They do, and we'll see how quickly they can ramp up. And then there's a team outside the bubble, Tom Thibodeau. It looks like he's going to be the new head coach of the New York Knicks. What's your thoughts on the fit with him and Leon Rose and World Wide West and everybody in there in that organization?
Well, obviously, Tom was their client when they were agents. They represented him. And so there's a great familiarity personally. And I think there's going to be great trust between those three. Tom's an elite coach. He is well aware of how great it is in New York when you win. And he's also well aware of how much a struggle it is when you lose in New York. And so they need to be patient. They need to fortify their roster. They need to find a star player to build around, either through the draft or free agency or trade. But if they are patient, I truly believe Tom is the guy to lead them back to greatness.
And part of that, Jeff, is, and we ask this about the Knicks all the time, now with this new group, and Trey just mentioned them all, is this a group that we think could actually attract a big-time free agent to come to New York, something they have been missing for a long, long time?
Well, I don't think initially necessarily they'll be able to attract one of the elite free agents because I think so much of that goes into how much you win and that star can picture in his mind, if I go there, they can be a championship-level team. No star could say that right now. So I think it's going to take them to build their roster, to add a lot of good parts, and then, much like Kawhi Leonard did in going to the Clippers, someone could envision themselves going and being very successful. So I think they have to achieve a moderate amount of success first, building their roster, winning games, and then I think they will be able to attract that free agent that may put them on the path of becoming championship caliber once again.
Yeah, that's the last thing I think we're waiting for, because they got everything else they think they have in place, but until they bring in somebody that says, I'm willing to go there, that'll be the indication that this thing is fully endorsed. Jeff, as always, we appreciate the time this morning. Thank you.
All right, you guys got to give me 1 second. Sure. I have so much admiration for you two guys. Mike Senior, the incredible run you had. Trey, what a outstanding career you continue to have. Mike Junior, you have big footsteps to fill in your pop's stead. So congratulations on all your guys' success. You have a big admirer in me.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's very nice of you to say, Jeff. Thanks
for being
so
part of it for so many years as well. We appreciate that very much. Thank you.
You got it.
Love Jeff.
Yeah,
Jeff. Awesome. Awesome.
And Gundy.
Yeah, awesome guy there. Obviously, him and Stan have both been such a joy. We talk about all the time getting to do this as a father and son on this show, but to have two guys like Jeff and Stan who have also been around here. Obviously, Stan's been a huge part of the Lebatard show and always doing great stuff with them. So it's always interesting to see that family dynamic play out there for two guys that seem very different despite coming, you know, and certainly being a part of the same family.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, our thanks to Jeff for everything that he's done and continues to do for us and the ESPN family of networks, and we'll see what happens as the bubble is progressing well. Then there are teams and sports that are outside the bubble.
Oh, boy.
And it was a bad weekend for Major League Baseball. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, the season resumed on Thursday with the game between the Nats and the Yankees. Juan Soto didn't play in that game because of a positive COVID test, and they had a few more pop up over the weekend, and then, of course, all hell broke loose when we have 11 Marlins now testing positive. So for more on all of this, we're delighted to be joined by our guy, Eduardo Perez, our fine baseball analyst. Eduardo, we heard Commissioner Manfred last night say the Marlins scenario was not a nightmare scenario for him. Where are you on what the scenario is for the Marlins right now?
Well, I live in Miami, and it being so close to what it is, and again, I've been just like everyone else in this area. We've been pretty startled about it, and some people are not surprised that if it was a team that was going to have the first outbreak of the year, it would be the Miami Marlins. It's a very, very difficult place right now. to live in. We have to be very careful, at least in the area where I live. Everybody's always masked up. And this is one of the biggest fears, that you would have an outbreak on the road because of the airplane scenario, because of the hotel scenarios, because you're going to other cities and other ballparks, and you don't want to be able to, you know, to pass it on and move it forward. And this is what's happening right now. I wouldn't say, because the Major League Baseball, they were preparing for this with the 60-man roster. But we, until we finally heard word that a team gets it, I think that's what our initial reaction is. What's next? How many games are going to get canceled? Are they going to cancel? Are they going to postpone the Eastern Division, both National and American League, for the next couple of days or not? What are they going to do? I think he was trying to calm the situation down. I did have conversations with a couple in the Marlins and a few players in the Marlins, and they were calm about it, and that sort of calmed me down a bit. But for people that are hearing it for the first time, you would want to think that it is a nightmare scenario, yet Major League Baseball, the owners, the Players Association so far believe that they can have this with the protocol that they've had under control. And we're hoping that the results that come in, that came in late last night or early this morning, proved to be at least on the negative testing side, positive for moving forward with the Major League Baseball season and the Marlins schedule.
Eduardo, now certainly on one side we could say the virus is going to dictate a lot of this on who it affects and how it spreads. But in looking at baseball's handling of this, especially the fact that players decided they were going to go out and play and they were kind of left to that decision, do you look at baseball in any way as pointing a finger at, I think they were at fault here, or I think they did this wrong there?
Again, this is the problem. You know, we're still learning so much about this virus. We see it daily on television. We don't know that the incubation period is of 1, 2, 4, it could be 7 days of incubation period. You could test negative on the next one. They aggressively tested everyone in the party after you had the first result. Then the other three came out, and then all of a sudden you got the 11 players and the two coaches that came out positive. The testing, we're waiting again as they continue to test aggressively for the next result. The testing is done with the saliva testing. It takes a little bit longer. But at the same time, we're also waiting to see about the Phillies that remain in a wait-and-see mode. From what I hear is that they had less of a possibility of getting it. Yet, still, being around that team, it's one of those great days on Sundays that if you went 0-4, you're going, wow, if I'm taking an 0-4 and I don't have to be on base and be close to any of those Marlins, it's probably the best 0-4 of my career having done that. But the guys are definitely concerned. They're definitely concerned for the well-being of their partners and of the competitors and also the umpires. I mean, there's so many people that have been around and exposed to this that you have to be able to make sure that that Major League Baseball, the Players Association, and the players of the Marlins are doing this right. But right now, it's not a time to finger point with one or any organization on how they went about it.
Talking to Eduardo Perez with us here, and worth noting, Dr. Anthony Fauci was on Good Morning America and was asked about how this potential outbreak could affect Major League season, and he said this could put it in danger, although I don't believe they need to stop now. We just need to follow this and see what happens with other teams on a day-by-day basis. Major League Baseball, the players, owners, managers have put a lot of effort into getting together and putting protocols that we feel would work. It's very unfortunate what happened with the Miami Marlins. And so as we continue to watch that side of things play out, the on-field portion of this has looked really good at times and certainly been felt great to have back. But Eduardo, I'm curious, as you've watched some of the early injuries, especially on pitchers, how big a concern is that becoming with players who try and gauge their own physical ability to play right now?
Yeah, it's concerning, no doubt. I mean, when you have Justin Verlander at the age of 36 going down with an elbow issue, we don't know the timeline of that yet. We thought it was going to be at the beginning. Initial reports were that it was going to be the entire season that he knocked that off, and he said, "Wait, well, not yet. That's not the report." Corey Kluber going down at least for 4 weeks with a shoulder tear. That's teres major. These are mid-30 guys that are going down, trying to ramp it up again and try to go 100% full throttle. That is concerning because these are two guys that have really never had major arm issues. Then when you have Reynaldo Lopez also going down with the Chicago White Sox, soft tissue things are definitely major concern moving forward. And that's the part that worries a lot of us that broadcast the games is we're going to see a lot of oblique issues. We're going to see a lot of hamstring issues in the next coming weeks. It's inevitable because of what they weren't doing for the past few months of playing the game every day at a high level with a lot of torque. You're going to have these. And we're hoping that if the injuries are that instead of testing positive for the COVID, then you know what? It comes with the territory. And it's unfortunate, but at the same time, it is something that the players know that they had to have tried to take care of themselves as much as they could during that time off to be ready for this. But it's hard to prepare for that 60-game rush in just 66 days.
Absolutely. And we're certainly seeing that, especially with the ramp up of being cut in half for the pitchers, as you alluded to. But you mentioned broadcasting the games. I'm just curious, Eduardo, because you've been part of the Korean baseball coverage that we've had, which is obviously extremely remote, and then you've been called. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't be more remote than the way you called the Korean baseball games. And now we have Major League Baseball games with no fans in attendance. For you as a broadcaster, how has that experience been?
It's been crazy, man. I've been broadcasting. The KBO was fantastic, and I hope to continue to do some of those games, no doubt, from the house. But just to have the reach of everyone, and my office is in my garage, and I've visited my garage more than ever during this pandemic because of it. But it's a great space. It's a great space to work. It's different. The technology that ESPN has been able to provide us, as far as even high home views of trappers. Of seeing the game, the communication with our producers, our executive producers, our directors have been unbelievable. The talkbacks with our partners have been great, and I think the team is the best part about it. I enjoy being with my friends. I call my friends my workmates, and that's the part that I enjoy. I enjoyed waking up at 3:30 in the morning, just like you guys do on every morning. Mike, you did it for the last 22 years. Sunday is going to be a sad day for all of us, brother. By the way, you guys, just like you guys go to work, I go to work doing this with the same energy, the same zest. And it's been just a lot of fun to be able to broadcast it and at least give an entertainment to people at home that really were starved for sports.
Yeah.
And listen, you do that part of it. That part of this is entertainment that some people forget, and you do bring the entertainment part of it. And that is much appreciated very much, Eduardo, with what you're doing, man. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks Eduardo. Right, thanks for the time.
Hey, wait a second. 22 years, you think I'm leaving without a Milwaukee?
Do it.
Milwaukee.
Thanks, there we Eduardo. Go. Thanks, Eduardo. Be well, be safe, my friend.
Keep it going, fellas. All right, take care.
See, yeah, we knew we'd get one.
You gotta
get Milwaukee out of
it. You gotta get the baby park in there.
Absolutely fantastic.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.